Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine in partnership with Odyssey, wherever you get your podcasts.
Portland's favorite morning roast.
I was listening to the boys this morning.
It's time for your Sunrise Guys.
They've got really good meat.
They got great meat.
Dirt and Sprague.
No, dude, get right to the meat.
On the Fan Sports Network.
All right, welcome back in. Hour number three here. 8:02 on the fan. Good morning. Brandon Sprague hanging with you. Dirt back on Wednesday. And a lot to get to in the third hour of the program. Exactly an hour from right now, Jason Swigard, we will be, fingers crossed, on the phone with Stuart Mandel.
Good.
So we'll have a college football conversation with Stuart Mandel.
Nice to get. Everybody's opened up practices. Everybody's in pads, I believe, finally doing the things, getting ready for it. So I'll be interested to hear from a national 50,000-foot perspective, what are the major storylines across college football.
Well, and as you've seen with many predictions, the brackets are being revealed. The predictions are out. Like, Oregon's, for a lot of people, Oregon is in the title game or winning the championship. As we've talked about many times, title or bust. It's like, okay, all right. Well, a lot of people buying in on it. And so we'll talk college football with Stuart Mandel. There's also something that came out in the world of college football that's happening right now that we've talked about this in the past, but there was a tweak to it that's starting to circulate. And I want to know if this is better, if this still makes you feel the same, is it worse? So we'll get to that, and I'll tell you what that is. But we're going to kick off the third hour. Got a lot of college football local audio to get to here.
Yes.
The coordinators at Oregon, Chris Hampton and Drew Merringer, have not been readily available day-to-day the way that some are, but like coordinators at programs all over the country now are not really as accessible as they once were. And so this weekend, we got to hear from both Drew Merringer, the new OC, who has 1 year of play calling under his belt, and the new DC, Chris Hampton. And both guys are internal hires, so they're familiar with everything going on and that has been at Oregon. Let's start with Drew Merringer, the offensive side of the ball. It seems like the offense, we're doing this thing again where we're asking out loud, is the offense the side that you're most concerned about, or is it the defense? I don't know where most Duck fans are at on that question. Be something that Dirk could more talk about.
Well, I think the fact that it's not a clear choice one, usually if it's not a clear choice one way or the other, it means either they both stink or they're both really good.
Well, they're both really good.
Yeah. So I think this is a good problem to have.
But there's been some stuff said about Merringer in his past. It's like, I don't know, man. And I'm like, all right, I don't know if 1 year at Rutgers is going to make me nervous about it, but Drew Merringer on, he's being labeled a scientist by all the players. Like, Dante calls him the Albert Einstein of Oregon football, and he was asked about being called a scientist by the offensive players.
That's news to me. I think it's cool that I think that the players have respect for what you know. I didn't know that until now. You know, I think that we're all just trying to do the best we can and put them in the best position possible and continue to educate them on, you know, more than just what they do on a, you know, on any given play, but how the game works, and what can prepare them to play at the next level and play for as long as they possibly can. So, you know, I think anything like that, you know, it's great. You know, just got to go out and get a little bit better every day and keep teaching them and keep growing.
He also talked about moving into the OC role, calling plays. It's been some time since he's done it. Here's Drew Merringer on becoming the new OC.
I think I have a better understanding of what who we are, what we can do at this moment. I do think there's obviously a clear transition from my role last year to what it is this year. You know, just the general organization of, you know, a lot of people is more of a task than I thought it would be, to be honest. But it's great. And we have an unbelievable offensive staff that, you know, takes a lot of charge, and I don't have to worry about as much things as, you know, you maybe think that I would. So I'm unbelievably thankful for them. But yeah, I think that me and Hamp are growing and getting better. And like we talk about it as a staff, you know, when we're watching practice tape, hey, these are the two things that I messed up in practice, right? These are the two things that I got to get better at. And it's cool sharing ideas with him. You know, we, you know, hey, this is hard for us. All right, let's do something with that, right? And same thing, vice versa. And so we can challenge each other to have better answers. So by the time we come and play this thing live, you know, I think we can be as good as we possibly can be.
You know, I think a couple of things could be true. Merringer may not be the greatest OC year one. He might have moments or plays that you're like, why would you call that there? That's definitely going to happen when you have an OC. But I've said this to a couple of people, like, I can't wait for the Oregon non-conference freakout. So, like, Bill Conley, a good friend of the program, did his bracket. He's got Oklahoma State in the playoff. That would mean Oregon has a playoff team on their non-con.
Yeah.
They're going to go and play at Stillwater. But I almost feel like they're so loaded on offense, and I know we have offensive line questions that we talked about last week, but and we'll get to receivers here in a second because he gave his thoughts on them. I just don't look at that team tight end, running back. I think their offensive line will ultimately gel and be totally fine because, you know,
there's
history.
A lot of talent and a lot of experience. It's a matter of finding, as we've heard, the right combination.
Yeah. You've got these younger receivers that are, you know, coming back. Evan Stewart, you got a transfer in Iverson Rooks. Like, your tight ends are fine. I almost wonder, is it a thing where Merringer may not be perfect year one in all instances, but, like, the talent is just so good that 90%+ of their schedule, they're just loaded and they're too
much
to
stop. Well, there's that. They also should be able to very quickly find those handful of plays. Like, okay, if we start outthinking the room a little bit, we know we can run this play and get 7 yards no matter what. And if a guy,
especially against that
shakes
schedule,
a tackle, he's gone.
Yeah.
You know, one of those things.
I mean, look at their running backs, dude.
Yeah.
You've got a Thunder Lightning, and you've got studs. I
need 4 yards. I can do this, this, and this, and don't even have to think about it.
Yeah, but people are still going to go in skeptical. And when we get to the non-conference swag, you wait. There's going to be moments in maybe all three games.
If it's 7-3 Boise State at the end of the first quarter,
we're going to lose our minds.
We're going to lose our minds.
I know. If they're struggling in Stillwater at the half and they're only up like
14-10 or something.
It's going to be like, why are we not blowing them out? Here's Drew Merringer on the receivers down in Eugene.
You got to go out and earn it. And I think that we have good culture here on the entire organization to where guys feel that and they push each other and even so much so that they want the other side of the ball to push them, which I think is cool. So for the young guys in the wide receiver room, I think they got to continue to grow and see where they're at. I think that at this point, still in fall camp right now, they just came off a great summer. Wilson Love did an unreal job with those guys. I mean, they look completely different and, which is, it's awesome to see. I mean, it's a testament to him and what the players did over the summer. But, you know, I think we'll have a better understanding of like where we're at probably in a week or so, you know, figure that out.
I think the good thing for Oregon is the NFL and college being so vastly different of you don't have this absolute urgent need for a one. It's just, it's a spread out situation.
Yeah.
So I mentioned the transfer from UAB, you got Evan Stewart back now.
Mm-hmm.
Their tight end is generating a lot of Kenyon Sadiq-like buzz.
Yep.
DeCorian, obviously. There's been some kind of buzz that the freshman Jalen Lott, he's a new stud player that they've got, that he's had some good showing. So, like, I don't know if that's the position of concern or question, but, like, I certainly don't look at it even with the young guys that haven't proven anything with any sense of, like, worry. Like, Dan Lanning in his time at Oregon obviously hasn't won the big one. He's flamed out in the playoffs in horrific ways. But what is he largely given you? A lot of trust.
A lot of consistent, very good to great play.
Exactly. So whatever the level of worry might exist, and I don't think it does with Duck fans, you can't really be that overly concerned about it.
And this is where the culture that they've developed allows you to be extremely competitive in practice without it being personal. Like, I think they want to get the best out of each other in practice because they understand
iron sharpens iron.
Iron sharpens iron.
Yep.
And so they're not trying to get anybody hurt. They're not, you know, they understand they are a team,
mm-hmm.
but we have to push and test the best of each other every day in practice. And when we accomplish that, then we'll be ready to finally bust through the final wall they need to get through.
Here's Merringer on where the offense can look to improve.
Yeah, I think that we looked at it and, you know, when we played our best, you know, it's kind of the age old adages of football. We don't turn the ball over. So, you know, and we create explosive plays. Right. And so as we continue to do that, Will did a great job last year. And we've got to find ways to run the football at times when we need to. And I think, you know, as we get down into the red zone, we can grow there and do some better things there. So I think we're looking at all of that, you know, and we got a fresh slate of guys that might be playing for us up front, you know? And so what can they do and how can we help them? And so I think every year it's a new puzzle to figure out. And last year is last year and we kind of leave it there. And what can we do moving forward rather than, you know, you look at it from like, hey, where can we improve? But more of so of how can we take the personnel that we have to go improve that rather than we just need to fix this problem, if that makes sense, because it might be a completely different solution.
On plays 20 plus yards down, talk about explosive plays. Oregon was number one last year. They had 100 of them. So like, it's not so much about can you top the number? It's about can you just stay relatively close to that? Because after that, you had Ole Miss, Texas Tech, Indiana, North Texas, Madison, and then like a three or four-way tie with Arkansas, UNLV, USC, USF. And to me, it's more about hovering around or at that same line. Like, because the last thing you want to do, it's not the end-all, be-all offensively, by the way. It's just more about hovering out, having the explosive threat while still being really balanced and not getting out of what you are offensively. One of the reasons their offense is probably going to improve is because their quarterback's coming back, Dante Moore, who Josh Pate has ranked as the second best quarterback in the Big Ten. Behind?
USC, Moyava?
No.
Oh.
Moyava is third.
No.
Yep.
If there's a guy that's a product of the system.
Julian Sayin.
Oh, no.
He's got Julian Sayin projected to be the best quarterback in the Big Ten with Dante second, Moyava third. He also had Underwood fifth and Nico tenth.
Well, that could change.
Underwood fifth is, there's a lot of lagway in that prediction.
There's a lot of faith in Kyle Whittingham.
I think that's largely what it is. And, you know, he's trying to project out if their offense is going to be better. And whatever way you define that, it's going to be because Dante Moore has improved. And he's grown a lot in this offseason, short period of time. But Drew Merringer on Dante's growth.
I think the area that Dante has grown the most is in leadership, right? And I think for him, you know, 2 years ago, it's not his team. Even for Poncho, guys like Poncho, it's still not really his team. And guys like that have grown into those roles and they are the standard for the way that things operate. So I think his biggest growth and development has been in his leadership role and the way that he pushes guys outside and not just does it with his words, does it with his actions. Like he'll be the first one at a signal meeting, right? It's really designed for young guys, new guys that haven't been around, but he'll be there, right? And he'll make sure that freshmen are there. So for that, like, I think the skill, like the tangible skills that you see on tape, right? Yeah. All of those, like he pushes, he grows, all that stuff, but playing that position so much more than just taking a snap, handing it off or throwing a slant. It's, you know, you're the heartbeat foundation. You're the spark of what's going to happen. And, you know, we saw it in big games last year and I think we'll continue to see him grow. His understanding and knowledge is fantastic. You know, some of the best I've ever been around.
So there's Drew Merringer on the potential growth of one Dante Moore, as he noted, has become quite the leader for Oregon. Still the same guy, but largely has grown a lot. Last year, the passing offense was fifth in the Big Ten, averaged 253.6. What is that number this year? How many yards per game does Dante Moore average? By the way, had a 71.6 completion percentage. Yeah. I know not all of this is Dante. You had some like spot fill-in stuff. Remember when he hurt himself against
there was that
the Wisconsin, you also, the Wisconsin game.
Yeah, you also had some games where they were very limited with depth at the wide receiver position due to injuries.
The
too.
Iowa game was ugly. Yeah, for the most
Iowa game
of that
weather.
Way.
Wisconsin game had weather. Yep. So I think the yardage will be up. I think it'll be closer to like 260. I don't see him getting to 300. I think they still want to balance. They want to run the football.
Nobody in the Big Ten had 300 yards per game through the air. USC was the leader at 296. Ohio State at 268.
So I think you'll see it closer to 260, 270, because I think they'll be able to bust more big plays with the passing game. I think the big thing, and I haven't looked at stats, but my recollection is when things bogged down for the Ducks offense, they had an inordinate amount of three and outs. And I'd have to go back, and I don't know if that's documented anywhere, but three and out series, like they would do something, they'd get pinned back deep, they would try to make some plays and had more three and outs, giving the ball right back.
They were fifth in the Big Ten last year in third down conversion rate. They are at 46.7% of their third downs were converted.
I think that's where it needs to go up to sustain. If they sustain more drives, like in games that came down to the wire, outside of that Iowa
The top
game.
Two teams were your Big Ten title teams. Yeah. It was Indiana, Ohio State, and then USC and Washington were actually above Oregon in third down conversion rate.
So I think that's where, if you're looking at one spot offensively where you want to see statistically significant improvement that will relate to more points on the board, and it'll be that.
You're never going to be perfect, but when you have a quarterback of this caliber or this talked about with this kind of experience, I think the natural inclination is just that, like, you're not going to see some of the lulls that what last year's team would show you in glimpses. It wasn't a lot, but the Wisconsin game, and you know, people noted the weather, what it was versus what you saw on TV, and then the Iowa game until the end there. It was just like you had examples of really ugly football, and I think largely what you're going to look for this year is Dante going to look to improve, as you mentioned, Swag, the third down conversion rate, and how all that's going to work for them with the receivers that are coming back, the ones you're bringing into the fold, your running backs. You need to get your line gelled, but
that's something you can gauge, you know, if you want to know if Maringer is comfortable in the OC role, that sort of thing, that relationship with Dante and what he sees.
It's interesting him saying, like, there's organizational stuff I wasn't aware of. I'm like, what? There's things at the OC job you didn't know about?
I think that's more so coordinating the schedule and all the different meetings with your position groups and all that sort of stuff.
But that's just something I assume people know going into those kind of roles.
I think that's the stuff when you are...
You need to have it before you learn it?
I think so. I don't think you fully comprehend it when you're not having to deal with it. You know it goes on.
Yeah.
But you don't fully grasp and understand the scope of it until it's put on your desk.
We didn't get to it there. A lot of Drew Maringer, a lot of what Oregon's offense will be. It's the sexy side of the ball, right? Defensively, pretty loaded. So we'll hear from Chris Hampton, the new DC, and then we'll also start diving in on some Oregon State. They had Oregon State Media Day this weekend. Fall camp's already started, though, so they're calling it Media Day. Jamarcus Shepherd with an honest admission and also reaching out to the fan base. So we'll get to all of that coming up next. Dirt and Sprague on 105.1 The Fan. Hey, Sprague here, hanging around for our great friends at Trajan Wealth. When I sat down with Trajan Wealth, I didn't get a sales pitch. I got a conversation. That's Trajan Wealth.com. They didn't try to sell me anything. They listened, asked questions, got to know what actually matters to me. Then they showed me how my current plan stacked up and where it could be stronger. That's the value of a second opinion. At Trajan Wealth, their fiduciary advisors build strategies around real people, not spreadsheets. Your goals, your timeline, your comfort level. They're independent and not tied to products. And they coordinate everything. Investments, taxes, estate planning. It's all bundled into one. I walked out feeling in control. Call Trajan Wealth at 1-855-TRAJAN-1. That's 1-855-TRAJAN-1. Or visit TRAJAN Wealth.com. It's never too early to plan for retirement, whether it's years away or right around the corner. The fiduciary advisors at Trajan Wealth can help you feel ready for what's next. Start the conversation today. Again, that's T-R-A-J-A-N JANWealth.com. Advisory services through Trajan Wealth LLC, SEC Registered Investment Advisor. Additional services through Trajan Estate and Trajan Tax. Actual client paid advertisement. Additional disclosures at TrajanWealth.com.
Life can feel overwhelming, but you don't have to go through it alone. On my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, I share openly and vulnerably about everything life brings us and what we can learn by living with our hearts a little bit more open. Every Friday, a new episode brings you a new story with topics on self-care, motherhood, healing, and more. You are enough, just the way you are. This podcast is a reminder of that. Follow and listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back in. Stuart Mandel in a half hour. We'll talk some college football with one of the national writers of the sport. Your neighborhood restaurant group brings the fan poll question on Twitter every day and dinner tonight. One of the five locations, Sandio's, Big's Chicken, Reverend's Barbecue, 808 Hawaiian, and Lorehurst Market Steakhouse. We've got two questions. We'll make kind of a package combo here for the poll question of the day. And those questions are pretty simple. What side of the ball for the Ducks do you expect to be better this season, offense or defense? What side of the ball for the Beavers do you expect to be better, offense or defense? You can vote at Dirt and Sprague. Those are your poll questions. I'll think of a couple others. I haven't posted any from the 6 a.m. hour yet. But we'll probably get to that. Stuart Mandel will join us again at 9:04. Something is looming in college football that we need to talk about. Kyle Shanahan got in a car accident because of autopilot. And if that is true, I'm still not going to be ready to let my car drive itself and just sit there and watch.
Nope.
So I don't know how true or not true that was, but he says he was on autopilot and then everything kind of went
to ass. I love how every week, what was this, almost a month ago he had the car accident?
It was July 14th he got in a car accident. We are almost exactly a month
from when
it happened. And
every week some little new piece of information, little nugget comes out that slightly tweaks. It's like, what? Very strange.
Tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
Yeah.
So help you God. Let's dive back into our coach's audio. We heard from Drew Merringer. Chris Hampton on the defensive side of the ball, the new D.C. For Oregon, and he talked about how many the returning starters and just what the defense means having the guys that are returning.
I think we've got a lot of experience. You know, like Coach Lanning said, we've got a lot of guys coming back, a lot of experience. We've also got a lot of guys who are inexperienced. We've got a lot of newcomers as well. The competition is high. It's probably similar to last season. We've always got a competitive team, a lot of good players. So I think for me, it's just, you know, being a defensive coordinator and, you know, leading the unit each and every day. That's probably the biggest difference for me personally. But I think our guys are flying around. They look energized. We look like a focus group, like where we at right now.
And much like Drew Merringer learning the OC role for Oregon, even though he was it, Hampton is, he's learning how to call plays and situations for Oregon. Here's Chris Hampton on that.
You know, the game has changed, and I think that, you know, it's probably a little bit different than what it was in 2022. The biggest piece is the helmet communication. It's different than what it was then. So just calling the game, and, you know, I've watched a lot of games this summer. You know, and just putting myself in a position of what would I call in this situation? What would I do? Watching some of our games, watching some of our future opponents. And, you know, I need practice just like the players do. So we do a lot of what we call it periods at practice, where Coach Drew and myself, you know, both call plays and we get opportunities to, you know, react. And we don't know what the situation, it's not predetermined what the situation is going to be. We've got to react. Is it first down? Is it third down? Is it fourth down? Is it second and 10 or is it second and one? Those are completely different downs. And so, I think that's been good by Coach Lanning.
I did not know 2nd and 10 and 2nd and 1 were completely different downs, but there is a 9-yard gap, so I think the math checks out. You know, there's been a lot of really good things said about him. The players seem to really love him. And I'm not sitting in the existential
dread. That's the first time I've actually heard him
talk.
Little Avery Johnson there.
He's got a little Avery in him. Yeah. I'm not sitting in the existential dread, but I don't live and breathe this the way Dirt does on all fours in my living room if they're down by 3 at Penn State. What I would say, though, is I've long thought this about Oregon under Lanning. I think a reason that people, not worried, I don't think worried's the right word there, but like bring up the offense maybe a little more, isn't the not trust in Dante. It's that Dan Lanning's pedigree coming up was what?
Defense.
So I think whether you have a Lupoy or you're a Hampton, and maybe Hampton will prove to be much better, right? You know you're doing a good job when your assistants are getting jobs. Is people just think there's almost two DCs versus the other side of the ball it's just the one. And I don't think that that's fair. I said that last year about Lupoi, of like, this idea that he's not doing anything, that it's just Dan Lanning and he's a recruiter, like, that's been a reputation. And I'm not saying Duck fans were saying that, but the idea that, like, that guy hadn't learned the game, but no. Mainly, oh, Dan Lanning's coaching defense, he should be fine. Like, I think Hampton's getting a little bit of that. Like, the fans or that the media might collectively view it as, you kind of have two coordinators on one side of the ball versus the one on the other.
I don't. I think if one thing I've seen in the progression of Dan Lanning as a head coach is there is so much that needs to be covered, and they figured out what everybody's responsibilities are, all of the different duties that go on with each different coaching position. He doesn't have time to waste trying to be a second defensive coordinator.
Yeah, I'm certainly not suggesting he is. I just think some people, now, it's kind of a relaxed vibe of like, our head coach's pedigree is defense.
Yeah,
he knows what to
like
do in
spots.
Like,
he's the safety net if
kinda, yes.
Something falls apart.
Right.
Certainly, he's got more experience and maybe more thoughts and knowledge on that side of the football.
Absolutely.
He's turning Hampton loose. He's like, you do it. My door's open. If you're stuck, if you need some advice, if you want something experience, it's like, hey, when you went up against this or faced a front like this or faced all Americans, how did you, you know, deal with it? Dan's there to give all that information to his guys.
And Dirt's raised questions about the linebacking group. Obviously, we know the defensive line is stacked.
That is the least experienced group on his on the defensive side.
Well, you have Coy Parrish back in the defensive backfield. You have Finney obviously coming back, but he was asked about the Ducks secondary, which is a very interesting one. Here's Chris Hampton.
The biggest thing that I've enjoyed seeing and coaching these guys is how they work together. They're a connected group. You know, there's not anyone in their group, I think, that is, you know, bitter about the other guy's success. They all celebrate each other's success, and sometimes that's difficult to do, you know, when you know that you're all competing for playing time. But they're all rooting for each other, cheering for each other. So I think we really have a connected group, and that's been a joy to coach.
Yeah. I mean, you look at the secondary side of that ball, man. Brandon Finney trying to build off of what he did. You still have Flowers there. Obviously, as I mentioned, Coy Parrish is transferring in. You got Carl Williams. Like, you got guys. Like, I don't know about the depth. I can't speak to the depth greatly. Again, I'm not in all fours in my living room the way Dirt is. But the area of concern of linebacker, totally fine, I guess, to have that opinion. But if you're trusting what Lanning is recruiting, how he's hitting the portal, I think it's one of those kind of like wait and sees, not so much like wait and worries. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think it's going to prove itself. And then their schedule also kind of lines up where I think they'll be okay.
Well, in the linebacking crew, so if you have a front four that is going to be wrecking, causing havoc, so the quarterback may not have as much time as they're used to read the field. Your secondary, you've got one cornerback that might be a first-round NFL draft pick in a year or two, maybe the first cornerback taken, who's a blanket, and you have top-level safeties. So the windows and the looks for a quarterback aren't going to be great when he does drop back. That should make it as easy as possible on linebackers to fill their roles.
Absolutely. And I also just think, like, the defensive line of this stuff is going to wreck how many teams?
Yeah.
And just cause the disruption, and then you're going to get, much like Brandon Finney last year came in with a little bit of buzz, and then just delivered because he feasted all day. So, defensive side of the ball, Chris Hampton, Drew Maringer, there's some Oregon audio down from the weekend. Haven't heard from them much. And I don't think you will going forward.
No, today we get the special teams coordinator and your O-line coach will be speaking after practice. So Coach Terry.
Yeah,
I think
Terry.
People will be interested in hearing, okay, how are you? Okay, yeah, you got Poncho in the middle. How is the rest of the line filling out? What combination? What are you looking at?
Down in Corvallis, they had media day over the weekend. An extended media days?
Media days.
Media days.
I would say days.
And here was Jamarcus Shepherd on going from spring ball to fall camp.
Our players have absorbed everything that we've asked them to absorb. We are putting a lot on their plate. And sometimes young people fold under that kind of pressure. But we've explained it to them often. We have to find your breaking point. You have to find your breaking point. And then we have to teach you how to improve that breaking point?
I it has to be from just the experience of his career. What I've noticed about him so far, without having seen a game, he is really, really keen on the break you, test you mentally, how you responding. Like, not that all coaches aren't, but like, he really emphasizes this when he talks about his players, his team, his program, of like, we want to destroy you to see how you respond to that adversity or how you will respond mentally to these situations. Like, he's really big on telling us about not breaking the kids down in a negative way, but kind of testing their character, their guts, their, you know, the all the cliches you can drop. He really likes to mention that.
Well, and I think he knows he's got to find the things within his roster that they don't know exist yet if they want to speed up the process in which they can be relevant and successful.
Also can't just show up, hey, we're the new coaching staff, some of you coming back, the others transferring in. You can't just do that and say culture's changed, you're different. Right? It's got to be, if you want the culture to change,
you actually have to change the culture.
You have to change. We have to change collectively. We have to fight through the adversity. And so I think that's a big driving force for him. He also had this about fans, the value of fans this season.
The last part is this. This is the third key point for 2026. I personally will not feel like we have our entire football team out there until our stands are full. I want every single one of our fans, if they can't be here, they better be tuning in. I remember coming out into Research Stadium as an opponent, and the fans made me feel extremely uncomfortable, made it very, very difficult for us to have success. So until we get those stands filled, we won't have our whole team out there.
So did the pissing rain, by the way. I was at that game. It was a disaster to sit and watch that football game. It was so much rain.
Is that directed at his administration?
No.
Or the fans?
I don't think it's a – I mean, it is. It's at the fans. But, like, I don't think he means it in a negative way. But, like, where I agree with him on this is I'm not gonna gatekeep what people choose to do with their money and their time. I'm certainly not going to games the way I once did. Not even going to pretend. But you can't be always actively bitching and moaning about how much media treatment you get or how much attention to the program you get. You can get attention and talk by how you play. You also get it from how you show up. And to his point, if Reeser is overwhelmingly packed with support, even if they're in the midst of a 4-8 season, You are sending a message to other college football fandoms. You're sending a message to that administration, to the coaching staff, and most importantly, to the players of like...
Players and recruits.
We're invested. We care. Yeah. This is going to turn into a hard place to play again because it hasn't been for a couple seasons.
Yeah.
It had its moment with Jonathan, had its moments before that with Riley and Erickson, and it's only morphed as a stadium. He's not wrong. Like, go pack Reeser. You can't complain about everything, but if you're not showing up and it's at 40% capacity or the other team is buying your tickets, what are you supposed to conclude about the emotional and financial investment, I think, of the fan base? And that's just a key point. I'm glad he hit it out because he also told Tyree Smith of Coin, he also told him in a one-on-one, we're going to have adversity. He basically said, we're going to suck.
Yeah, he's looked at his
schedule.
But
you got to be here to still support us
even
through those moments of adversity. So I think in a long-winded way, he's telling you, we're not going to be amazing, but you got to hang with us, support us, so we can build this thing.
I felt that was also somehow partially directed at the administration of, let's make it as easy as possible for fans to get here and fill the stadium.
Well, the atmosphere needs to be good. Like, you can't just have a cornhole set up outside of the stadium. Like, it's got to be a really good environment. It's got to be great. I've seen it there when it's been amazing. I've seen it there when they've won two games. And it's, talk about a difference. So there's some Jamarcus Shepherd. Let's get to hear from his coordinators. We heard from the Oregon coordinators. Mitch Dolin and Mike McIntyre leading the defense. We'll get to that coming up next. A little bit more local college football audio, and then we'll talk college football with Stuart Mandel in the final hour of the program at 9:04. We're back with that on The Fan.
The podcast Campus Files is back with more stories of scandal, crime, and intrigue on college campuses.
It is not hard to destroy a college.
It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we'll talk with Stuart Mandel of The Athletic coming up here at the top of the hour. It's a nice little college football Monday here. Dirt and Sprague hanging out. Say one more time, and probably at the end of the show, Dirtback Wednesday.
Yes.
Wednesday.
So tomorrow will be a best of, mostly.
Okay.
I'll do a live cafe.
Nobody wanted to host, huh? We got nobody that wanted.
No, I think it was more a matter of.
Like I saw Casey hosted. He did happy hour.
Oh, there you go. It's a four-hour show, so it's a lot.
What do you mean? A lot.
It's a lot.
Give these sports takes, baby. You got 4 hours to do
exactly.
It. Exactly. So I'm going on vacation tomorrow. I fly out to San Diego, taking a Padres game, enjoy the Southern California life if I can.
San Diego is wonderful.
It's crazy how many times
I've
been to LA.
Never been to California and had the resources, that's where I would go.
Of all the places, that's usually what people say.
All the places.
Yeah. San Diego's great.
It's fantastic.
I found out that I could get a discount at Torrey through the San Diego resident thing.
Okay.
But then I found out yesterday late that the person down there that I know lives just outside the county line. so that was great.
So what does a public round cost during peak season?
I think, and maybe it was Pebble. Maybe it wasn't Torrey Pines. Maybe it was Pebble.
Pebble, you have to know somebody to get on.
Okay, then it was Torrey.
Yeah.
Right? Because you can publicly go to Torrey and just walk in and pay $500, $600, whatever it is.
I think so if there's a
I think it was like $70 or $80.
Wow.
Which is what I pay for local munis here. So,
okay.
You know, the local discount, not going to happen. So it's not in the cards, unfortunately.
That's too bad.
But looking forward to the trip. All right. Before we get to Stuart Mandel and before we give you an update on something that might be evolving in a different way in college football.
Yes.
Let's get to some more audio of Oregon
State.
Yeah,
the coordinators.
Well, we heard from the coordinators at Oregon, Drew Merringer and Chris Hampton. And we heard from Jamarcus Shepherd. Let's hear from Mitch Dolan, who has this to say about building their offensive identity. This one's kind of a long one, 144. It's kind of a lengthy little cut.
Yeah, but there was a lot to it. And I think Mitch is one of those guys that I don't know if his coffee or Diet Coke or whatever it is but he had about six of them before practice.
Yeah, he strikes me as that. Let's do this. Here's Mitch Dolan on how he's evaluating the quarterback so far.
We're timing how long it takes for the ball to get out of their hands. So, like, yesterday we had some numbers in the 2.6, 2.8, whatever that number is. And I did some studies back in the past on NFL quarterbacks and what those first round picks a couple years ago with Penix and Caleb Williams and all that stuff. That says a lot about what the quarterback is. Is he a guy that gets the ball out or is he a guy that holds on to it? So again, it goes back to the numbers and those first 2 days they've been doing a really good job of just getting the ball out. Anything below three, honestly, anything below three, because if you get past 3 seconds, you flirt with sacks and you flirt with some messy pockets. So anything under three, I would hope an offensive tackle can block for 3 seconds. And I believe we have the guys that can. So, and that's when we talk about our system. It's a timing-based system. It's a rhythm-based system. So our receivers know this is one-hitch timing. So one-hitch timing means I only have till the quarterback takes one hitch and that ball is coming out.
So there's Mitch Dolan, and that is a position that's obviously greatly important to the success of your offense. And I've heard not amazing things about their situation. I've heard Malik Murphy might be leading the way, but it's not something they're particularly excited about. This is just off record kind of conversation. Here's my question to you. As we get closer to the season for Oregon State, it's starting to feel like, buckle up, Buttercup. If they win 4 games, be happy they double their win total.
Well, one, their non-conference schedule is not easy.
It's certainly not easy. They're going to get shellacked by Texas Tech. That much we know.
The Houston game is...
Houston's probably going to beat them as well.
And you would rather have that game in the middle of the season than right out of the chute.
You mean you don't want that Texas heat? Is that what you're telling me?
I just don't think you want to deal with a squad like that.
Maybe, but it could be better early to face a team who might have some uncertainty in certain areas. Over under, 2.5 quarterbacks starting this season for Oregon State.
Ooh.
Here's their 4 quarterbacks. Malik Murphy.
He will start somehow, some way, at some point.
Braden Atkinson, the sophomore transfer. Brady Jones, senior transfer, or Isaiah Ariza, who is a true freshman? Over under 2.5 quarterbacks starting for Oregon State this season.
There's two pieces to this puzzle. One, whoever starts game one stinks. How many, you know, nobody can get it.
How long do you get after
Long's the rope for anybody? And then two, how many injuries do you sustain at the quarterback position?
It's a multi-layered question, my man.
I'm going to say over.
You're taking the over of 2.5?
I think this is, yeah, I think.
Now, having, like, if Murphy
part of it's
going to
play into
week,
the record, they've got a tough stretch early on. Once they lose, bowl is out of the question.
If Atkinson starts week two because Murphy's bad week one, and then he plays for 5 weeks, and then Murphy comes back, that doesn't count.
No, that doesn't count.
Two different names.
Three different names.
Yeah, three different names have to start at the
position. I think if they're out of it by the end and nobody's impressed him at that point, the freshman goes in to see what he might be able to do and building momentum for spring.
Here is Mitch Dahlin on evaluating the offensive line.
I'm grading it by the five best. Like, we'll grade them individually, but I want to see the five best guys that play together. So kind of what I mentioned in the spring is we're grading the center on that. Now I'm grading the best five. So we're having stats of whatever those five numbers are, five jersey numbers, whoever has the most yards per rush, I'm like, okay, that's a unit that's moving the ball. So that's how we're doing it there.
I mean, yeah, no. If the center's awesome, but the group sucks, you're not changing the center. It's an interesting way to say it, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm nervous. I got to be honest with you. I'm not feeling amazing as we keep getting closer and closer.
I feel like this season is a total work in progress.
Yeah, it's an absolute total teardown.
There's going to be competition week to week. I think your starting lineups, outside of a few anchor guys that have to be in there simply because of their experience and talent level compared to the rest of the group. Outside of that, I think you could see different starting 11s on both sides of the ball week to week.
Let's get to two more here before we get to the final hour with Stuart Mandel. Here is the defensive coordinator. Mike McIntyre is back in the pack. You know, we last saw him at Colorado, and now he's back. He's back in the Pac-12. It's a much different conference than when he left.
He's an old school coach.
He is a very old school coach, but he's got a lot of experience, so it's good, for the coaching staff. Mike McIntyre on the impression so far of his defense in fall camp.
They're hungry to be coachable. When you notice that is they come and ask you questions, you know, even after a play's over, that type of thing. Usually they know they did something wrong. They're trying to hide from the coach. When they're coming to find you and seek you out, if you didn't see it, like you were watching something else, and they're asking, to me, that shows great maturity, and that shows you that they truly are bought in on that type of thing, instead of just saying, well, coach didn't see me mess up, I'm all right. We're not getting that, which is, I think, a great culture aspect.
Sometimes these coaches, they're talking in codes, and it's like, oh yeah, they're asking great questions. I'm like, that's not I'm not feeling amazing.
They're getting beat a lot.
That's kind of what my takeaway was. Here's one final one. Mike McIntyre on the strength of their defense.
I would say, you know, our D-line inside and our linebackers are our most experienced part of our football team, which is good to have the strength up the middle and that for the run and different things. And the eye discipline that those linebackers have to have for pullers and shifts and all, and reading if a guy's light, they know what's going to happen if it's a pass or run by the D lineman. Those are big keys that give you ability to anticipate plays. And they, when you've played a lot, so I feel very comfortable with their having ability to play a lot, and they can see things, you know, pretty quick.
So that's the experience of their defense, but it's going to be, the takeaway is Beaver fans, support us, be patient. I hope these quarterbacks get the ball out quickly, because they're right now they're not. And, you know, these defensive guys, they're asking good questions. A little different a vibe in Corvallis than I'd say in Eugene.
I appreciate that everybody's being honest.
Yeah, I mean, they're not, like, outright telling you it's horrific.
They're not blowing
it's
smoke
really
up
bad,
anybody's butt right now.
But they're kind of telling you in a way, like,
that this is,
we're learning.
Yeah, this year we're pouring cement.
We're setting the foundation. Don't expect the house at the end of the year, all right? We'll start the framing next year. Loaded final hour of the radio program. Move on from Oregon State coordinator and coaching audio. Kick it off, Stuart Mandel, the Athletic national college football writer. Let's talk with him about the landscape of college football, how he views Oregon, the Big Ten, et cetera. We'll do it. Final hour on The Fan.
Hey guys, Fly on the Wall is back for another season. That's right, on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.